Well, it's a great pleasure to be here this morning. And not maybe every one of you knows me, but I know many of you, and I can think back to a wide variety of experiences with many members of this church. I was here 4 years ago, sharing about Taiwan, and just about, you know, this week or next week. It was September, and so here we are. Again, I want to start by telling you just a little bit about the reality of ministry in Taiwan. Taiwan is not China. You do not have to go there and do something else in order to do something for God. I go with a missionary visa. I had to prove my credentials that I have the right qualifications to do church ministry. Very different from China. But it's also very different from China because China, when the communists took over and the Cultural Revolution came in the 60s, they just got rid of all religious practice. The Christians kind of went underground and continued to grow, and they really have done a wonderful job, and the gospel has become very Chinese in China. It's the gospel, but it speaks to Chinese people. Taiwan has never had that experience. They have Taoism, Buddhism, Confucianism. They have Chinese folk religions. All of those are there. There is a temple almost on every block. These temples have hundreds of gods. Nobody has ever stopped them from practicing religion. They have perfect freedom, but they have no sense of need for God. Many of you can remember the days when every little trinket that you bought at the 5 and 10 store said made in Taiwan. And like many of the things that say today say made in China, they'd last about that long and then they were gone. That's not Taiwan today. They are producing the best computer chips in the world. It's high tech, it's cutting edge, it's modern, they're educated, but they're not very interested in the gospel. That being the case, the Operation World Book that gives us all the information about what's happening in the world in terms of the gospel says that Taiwan is the only Chinese population that has never had a gospel breakthrough. It's hard work in Taiwan. So I'm going to share a story with a few people today. And this is a five-year story. I initially went to Taiwan. Just as a little background, I was 10 years in Venezuela, teaching at a school for missionary kids. I returned to the U.S. and spent another 20 years working in our mission office in the greater Chicago area. And then in 2016, went to Taiwan. This is my fourth career within my mission. So I went to Taiwan in 2016. Nate, you can go ahead and hit the next slide. A month or so ago, we were talking together with my colleagues about the networks we have of relationships for the gospel. And after we got done doing this, I thought, okay, this is the way I want to tell the story. So I arrive in Taiwan in 2016, and one of the first things I begin to do is go to the Taichung Language Center because I need to learn a little bit of Chinese. And here you have a picture. There are three of us with kind of light hair. We're the students. And the four ladies with the dark hair are our Chinese teachers. This picture was actually taken after I'd been there about a year. And at that point in time, the school had moved to a new location. And we were now in a high-rise office building, 13th floor, lovely new facilities. That's where this picture is taken. Along the way, go ahead and flip to the, yeah, there we go. So in this new facility, there's somebody who's thinking about, who sees that there's this new business, a language center, and kind of figures out somehow that these might be English speakers that would come to this place to learn Chinese. So she meets one of the guys, one of the students in the elevator, and says, "Do you think, would you be interested in an after-work language exchange, and we'd help you with Chinese, and you could help us with English?" At the same time, okay, hold on just a minute. I haven't caught up to your pictures. At the same time, this guy here in the bottom, my bald friend, moved from Mongolia to Taiwan with my organization and started at the Language Center as well. Okay? This woman here in the picture of the two of them is the person who was talking on the elevator about the language exchange. But the guy she was talking to was a young man, and he didn't really think that having a language exchange with this young woman was such a good idea. So he took the information to the director of the school, who came to me and said, would you be interested in doing this? You've been now taking lessons for a year, part-time, but you're probably at the right point where you could begin to do this and it would be helpful to you. And I said, sure, this is Mandy. Well, we found out, actually, it was Mandy, but her boss, Vincent, also wanted to be in on this. So there were two of them. And as it turned out, I eventually discovered that not only am I meeting with them every Thursday night for an hour to an hour and a half of language exchange, but my buddy Jeff, who just moved from Mongolia, he's meeting with them on Wednesdays. This is Taiwan. If you have an educational opportunity, one is good, but two is better. And so ever since 2017, we've been doing this Thursday night, or Jeff on Wednesday, language exchange. So, you know, what do you do in those kinds of things? Well, you do things like, I was learning to read some Chinese characters, unlike English. Now, think about this. Remember when your first grader was trying to learn to read? Well, that's about what this is like. I read painfully slowly at this point, and these people have been reading and writing English for a long time. They run a technology company. They organize and create things for, well, the thing they're working on right now is called a game caller. And it's some kind of a noisemaker that you put out in the woods to get game to show up so you can, you know, I think they use it, they'll probably use it out in the West where groups come in to hunt for a week. And, you know, they want to get them to places where they know there are animals, that kind of thing. But they also did cameras for police departments. They do all this kind of stuff. So they're highly educated. They're very technological, the whole bit. He's the owner. She's his right-hand assistant, second in command as far as I can tell. They've never said exactly, but she knows everything. And they talk to Americans. Their clients are in the U.S. They talk to Americans at least every week on the phone. They don't use Zoom or video, so they can't see the people they're talking to. They're just listening. Now, don't anybody be offended, but one of their customers is in New Jersey. And they have a little trouble with it. And so they just wanted help from a native speaker so they could understand these conversations. They told me at the beginning that they would, after the conversation was over, then they would write the email to document what they understood, what everything was going on in the conversation, and make sure they were doing, got it right, whatever. I just am amazed that they can do this. And they're group phone calls. It's not just one person. I mean, so sometimes they're talking over each other. You know how this is. Okay. So this is why they wanted some additional help. Early on, they came to me one time and they were, I forget what the, so who the customer was or what the product was, but they had something where it had to come back to get refurbished, and they were working on those, but in the meantime, they had made a new shipment to them. But the person in the U.S. didn't want to pay until all the refurbished ones came through too. So they said to me, could you help us address this issue that we actually need to get paid for the new ones that are good, you know? So we worked on this. How could they, I don't know, and this is 5 years ago, so I don't actually remember exactly what we came to a conclusion, but by the time we were done on Thursday night, we had mapped out a plan for them, and the phone call was going to be the next day on Friday, and then I didn't see them again till Thursday. But I came into there on Thursday and said, well, how'd it go? They said, well, we did what we said, and we hung up, and we didn't really know, and we waited, and we waited, and we weren't sure, and then Monday, there was money in the bank. And everybody was happy. So I had passed the test in a sense that I could really contribute to their English learning and would be a valuable asset to them. It's not that they hadn't really given me a test, but it's really great in these kind of situations where both can benefit. I say these are God's gift to me. They have taught me so much about Taiwan. Not only language and culture, but they have put up with me reading character by character with no smoothness or rhythm and forgetting characters. And you know, in Chinese with characters, you can't look at it and sound it out. You either know what that character means or you don't, or you semi-guess. You know, I think it starts with an S, so you start, and then they, once in a while they jump in and tell you, and then you're better off. But anyways, they are really, really, really great. I have grown to really love them. Early on, this was, you know, I couldn't make this happen. God send it to me. So, but all along, not only do I want to help them with their business, I want to have an opportunity to share why I'm here in Taiwan. They know I'm a missionary, but you know what? The word missionary, what does that mean? Especially when you have no gospel background, biblical background. They really don't know what it means. They know it has something to do with churches. And there are churches in Taiwan with red neon crosses on them. Many, many, many. They love neon there. And red is the thing. So that's okay. So here we go. Let's go to the next slide. So a year and a half goes by. Taiwan is hosting an international floral exposition, gardens in multiple places. I really loved it. I went two or three times. I would come back to these exchanges and show them pictures of whatever. But at the same time, I had had trouble with my eyes, double vision. And I went and saw a doctor here in the U.S. He sent me to a specialist, and she found somebody that could help do therapy with me to get my eyes working together again in Taiwan. And I got back there, and those people didn't exist. I couldn't find them. So then I started hunting around, and finally on Facebook, I found somebody, eye doctor, who used the right terminology of what my problem was, and I wrote her a message and said, could you do this? Now, she didn't live really near me. It would have been an hour and a half high-speed rail train to get to her, but I would have gone there to get help. And she wrote back and said, well, you know, the best person in all of Taiwan to help you with this is right there in Taichung. He was my professor in university. It's Professor Jack Chen. And she told me where, and so I made an appointment with him. And he is the person who has prescribed the glasses that I wear today. But in the meantime, he was ready to give me glasses right away. I said, but wait. I would like to have, and I've been asked to have by my mission, an MRI to make sure that we don't have a tumor in my brain. And then, if that's all okay, we'll do, oh, okay, well then you need an ophthalmologist who can order this kind of thing. So he sent me to the ophthalmologist, and she ordered the MRI. So Mandy and I are coming back from a visit at the flower event, and it's Saturday, and I think the MRI is scheduled for Tuesday, and she knows this. And she says to me, standing in the middle of the train with people all over everywhere, you know, commuter train, says to me, are you afraid to have that procedure? And God graciously allowed me to honestly say, no, I'm not. Because I know God knows. I know He loves me. I know He will take care of me. This was our first, as far as I can tell, the first time we ever had any spiritual conversation. And then she said to me, you know, Christians seem to be really confident. And I thought, oh dear, this is not the message I want to give. I said, well, if Christians are, it's not because, for me at least, it's not because we have confidence in ourselves. Our confidence is in this God, that He can take care of things, not that we can take care of ourselves. That was it. That was the conversation. And then we went our way, and I went home thinking, oh, Lord, give me some more opportunities to have conversation, because this is just scratching the surface. But it's a start. It's about time for Christmas. And I'm thinking, I want to tell the Christmas story this year. I hadn't done it the previous year, but I think holidays are a good way to talk about things. But I don't want them to come away with the idea that Christmas is an American holiday. I want them to know the biblical Christmas story. So I'm thinking, how can I tell the story? Oh, I have some Christmas cards that people sent me. So I start sorting through my Christmas cards. Do you know how many there are that don't have anything to do with the Bible story? So I sorted out all the pretty candles and all the farmhouses and all the beautiful white churches with snow and all those things. And they're beautiful, but they wouldn't help me tell the Bible story. And I found some of these. And I took them to my language exchange night, and I started to work my way through the story. Mary and Joseph come down to Bethlehem. They don't have a place to, you know, no inn. And then there's an angel and shepherds, and the wise men come, and, you know, gifts and the whole bit. And I made the point. This is, now, here's the thing. Taiwan has Santa Clauses and reindeer and Christmas trees, and they decorate in purple and turquoise and things like that, but okay. And they have all the trimmings of Christmas, But they don't have the gospel. The only nativities I can find in Taiwan are stuff that look like it came from Europe. I have heard that there is one company that makes nativities where the characters look like they're Chinese, but I have yet to see it. Anyways, at that flower show in December, they did have some winter scenes, and somebody did do a nativity. And I heard one person say Jesus. And I thought, okay, somebody knows what that is. But I was shocked because it's just not known. So I'm telling the story. This is the real story. This is the story in the Bible that God told about what happened. That was my point. Okay, fine. So we carry along. We do other things. I'm looking for opportunities. But a year goes by, and now it's Christmas 2020. And this time I had gotten a copy of the Jesus in the Bible storybook for kids in Chinese. And I thought maybe I could use this time to tell the story. So what I did was I used Google Translate. I scanned it, used Google Translate, so I kind of would know what the characters actually sounded like and whatever, and what the words were. I did some homework ahead, and then I brought the book to our language exchange and said, would you read this to me, and I'll try to back translate it for you to tell you what I think it says using English. Well, now, I had an advantage because I knew the story, and I'd done a little bit of homework. But anyways, so that's what they did. They read it for me and then sentence by sentence, and then I would tell them what I thought that sentence said, and then they would correct me. Because sometimes the word that was actually written there on the page in Chinese doesn't really translate exactly to the word I was trying to use in English. It was the right idea, but it wasn't the exact word. So I was learning some vocabulary, and they were hearing the story, and they were reading it. When I read it, you know, it's hard to... If I were trying to read it, it's hard to listen when a little kid reads. And that's the way I read. Even now, at 5 years in, I'm still a very slow reader out loud. So I wanted them to read it so they could read it with the right fluency and they could hear it, you know. So that was 2 years ago. And then another year passes and we get to this last December. And I need another way to... Oh, wait, back up. I'm sorry. There's a key point here. Here we are with the Chinese version. Here's the shepherds laying in the field with the sheep before the angel comes. And then the angel comes. Give me that one, Nathan. And it's this glorious, and it talks about a heavenly host and all this stuff. And it's noisy and loud. Whatever. Chinese love, noisy, loud, all that stuff. So that's great. We get done with the story. And Vincent, the owner, says to me, you know, they really shouldn't have said that, written that story and used that word about the heavenly host, the army of heaven. He said, the way that story is written, with all that noise and all that light and all that stuff, sounds to me like a UFO landed. Now, I found out later that he believes in UFOs. But I'm thinking, wow, never in my life have I heard the Christmas story related to a UFO. And I'm thinking to myself, this is what it means when you have no background from the Bible. Today, this morning, I was listening to chapter 10 or 11 of Isaiah, and they use the term the Lord of Heaven's armies, the host or something, again and again and again. Those of us who have been in church, and even in America, we would think, you know, the heavenly host comes, and we don't think too much about that. But this is a concept they've never heard of. He had no context for it. All he could think of was that it's a UFO. That's how... There's no foundation to work with. You start from scratch is what I'm getting at, in a sense. Okay, that was a year ago. This past December, I decided I would look for something else, and I got to the Christian bookstore, and I found a little kid's preschool book. And it's got cool little... beautiful little artwork, and just one or two sentences per picture. This works better for me. And I can work on the translation and all. And so I brought this book as well. Now, one of these times, maybe a year ago, I forget, Mandy at one time said, so when we talked about the wise men, so is that why Christians give gifts at Christmas? Yeah. That, okay. She had also told me one time in her childhood, she had a teacher who took them Christmas caroling. I don't know how that worked in public school, quite honestly, but, you know, So she's had some exposure, and I do know that she has a sister and brother-in-law who are Catholic, so they at least know something of the Bible, and they've talked about that. And so she, but that's kind of her experience, okay? But at, I think it was a year ago, in 2020, so it'll be 2 years ago now, she said, you know, about the gifts. So I'm talking about this, and we go through the Christmas story with this, using this little book again, and, you know, it's the same story, but I have to find a different way to, you know, for them to see it. And somewhere in the end of the conversation, oh, in this time, I made the point that this is one of the most important Christian holidays. And Mandy said, yeah, and there's another one, isn't there? Easter. I said, oh, yeah, there is. Keep that in the back of your mind for a minute. Let's go ahead and move on to there's the story, and now go on to the next one. Okay, so here's my Ebb relationships, and now I get to meet her family. On New Year's Eve weekend, she invites me to go to her town with her. And they're doing some kind of a flower event there too. And so I go to town with her, and there she is with me. We went to when they do these kind of things, you can sign up for a little do-it-yourself something or other. So they came out with a pot holder and a plant, and you dump a little dirt in and put it around, and you go home with this little succulent plant, you know, that you can't kill. And then there was another one where they gave seeds and you could grow something, and of course I got it home, and within 2 weeks it was dead, but okay. And so did she. But we had this fun. Back up just a little bit again, Nathan, because I want to tell you who these other people are. So that's Mandy on the left. In the middle is her sister, who is the oldest sister. This is the one who's Catholic. And as we're standing there to get our picture taken, Mandy or one of her other family members, I can't remember which, said, well, she's almost 50 years old. This will tell you something about the culture. And she said, no, I'm not. I'm already 50. Age is of value. You want to be older. It's not youth that wins it all. I mean, youth is fun, but age is respected. So she was willing to tell us all that she was already 50. And then on the picture on the right, the woman to the right of me is Mandy's mom, who's in her late 70s and into 80s or something. Mandy is about the middle child of like 7 kids. She tells me they had a van that could carry 9 when she was a kid to get drive around town, which is unheard of in Taiwan now. Most families have 1 or 2 or 3 at the most. But and then on the girl to the left is, I believe, the daughter, the older sister. It's a niece at least. So we're there. Her mom, you can see, is holding some green leaves because her mom's a great gardener. She has gardens on both sides of the house. We went out to look at them, and everything that was ripe, she'd pick and say, you'll take some of this, won't you? And I went home with more fruits and vegetables than I could possibly use before they would go bad. I had to find people to give them to. This is Taiwan. You never go away empty-handed, and food is great. The best thing you can bring to somebody when you go to their house is fruit, because fruit will make them healthy. And, you know, this is just wonderful. So this was a truly Taiwan experience. Now we can go to the next slide. Back behind me in this slide is the youngest sister, Mia. She's the life of the party, as you can see. She's goofing up around, whatever. And she works, actually, at the company that's just out of sight behind her. And this is about half a mile from where they live, out in the country. Rice paddies all over everywhere. We'll come back to her a little later. But the big picture here is a brother. And he is a coffee and tea connoisseur. So while we're outside sitting on the swings, he'd come out with little cups of coffee. Guatemala and Kenya and I don't know where. And I, having lived in Venezuela and next door to Colombia, I like coffee. And Costa Rica, I like coffee and I like good coffee. So I would drink every little cup he gave me and tell him how great it was and the whole bit. Then we get inside. On the ground floor of a Taiwan home, basically is the area where you entertain the public. If you really run a business, you run it out of this floor. So in this area, they have a wooden table, a big wooden table with chairs around it. But on top of that is probably a 3 or 4 inch slab of marble that's got stuff carved out of it. So you can make tea and you can spill water and the whole bit. It doesn't damage the table or anything. And this is the tea serving space. And when you come in there and they, you know, I mean, I was an honored guest. And when they invite you to your family, and the whole family's there. And there was another sister or brother-in-law, I forget. There were multiple ones outside playing badminton and all kinds of stuff. But I was invited to the family. This was a huge relational step forward. And I had a wonderful time, and it was great. That was New Year's Eve this year. A couple months go by. We get to March, and they decide they want to do some outings. The first one, we went up into the mountains and did a little bit of hiking along a river where Vincent just loved and loved to fish when he was a young man. Now it's developed almost into a national park, but he had a wonderful time, you know, showing us around and the whole bit. And then, oh, that day, when we did that, I went to my language exchange on a Thursday night, and somehow that we got to talking about this place, and they had told me about it a long time ago, but I hadn't gotten there yet. And they started talking to themselves, and I could tell they were trying to figure out when we might be able to do it. And then they look at me and say, well, could you go tomorrow afternoon? Well, Fridays, I have class all morning, but I don't usually schedule appointments, and I didn't have any, so I said, yes, I could go. So off we went. And the question they asked me was, there's a big, big, famous temple on the way. And they said to me, would you go into a temple? And I said, well, I won't go into a temple to worship, but I would go to see a temple to learn Taiwanese culture, to learn something about Taiwan. Okay. So on the way up, we stopped at this temple, and then we went on and did our hike and had a good time and came home. And then Mandy says to me the next day or something, I don't know, you know, my younger sister knows a lot about that, where we grew up, and there's lots of historical and cultural places there. And we'd like to introduce you to those, because they've picked up along the way. I ask lots of cultural questions and lots of history questions or whatever, that I'm interested in this. And that just happened from the ordinary, everyday kinds of stuff I had in my Chinese reading stuff. So she says, well, so I'm thinking, okay, what about on the weekend? Oh, no, no, not the weekend. Her sister's busy on the weekend, but she's got some paid time off. She could go on Wednesday. Can you go on Wednesday? Okay. So Friday afternoon, I go to the up into the mountains, and Wednesday, I go to their city, and they take me around to all the cultural places, multiple temples, but they have sections of towns where they've left them like they were 50 years ago, and it's like going, and Taiwanese love this. It's like going back to the happy days and the carefree days, and every little shop is selling, you know, candy from 50 years ago and all this kind of stuff. They took me all over the place. They said, okay, we'll do a snack here about 10 o'clock. And they bought me a whole bowl of noodles. It was like having a whole meal. I mean, it was just, you just never know what to do, but you just go with it. It's great. It was wonderful. Next picture, please. Here we are at the beginning. Above us is a kind of a pagoda at one of the big temples. And Mia's on the right, Mandy's on the left, I'm in the bottom, we're holding hands. And Mia puts her cell phone in the middle, takes her shoe off, touches the camera with her toe, and takes the picture. And this is how it comes out. Fantastic. I don't know how she did it, but it was great. Okay? Had a wonderful day. And we came back, and we went back into our routine. And then comes late June, early July, and I come to language exchange one day, and Mandy says Mia was on a scooter and got hit by a car. Next slide. I think it's the next one. Oh, wait a minute. Back up. I forgot Easter. Let me tell you about Easter. I'm jumping ahead. Okay, Easter. Easter comes, and I remember that she said something about Easter being a holiday, and so I don't want to miss this, but here's the problem with Easter. It's not a happy holiday, really. I mean, Easter Sunday is, but the lead up. And I'm thinking, what do I do with this? Christmas, you got presents and you got bells and you got angels and all of this. And what do I do? So I say this to my teammates, and Jeff, who's also meeting with them, says, well, you do the triumphal entry. And I thought, okay, I could start with that. So I go thinking, where can I be? I looked in the books that I had. None of them did a very good job of it that I thought would work well with adults. I searched and searched and searched, and finally, I found this app, the Jesus Film Project app. Now, you probably know the Jesus Film. It's the two-hour film that tells the whole life of Jesus or whatever. You can find that on that app and show it to somebody on your phone. But they have taken that whole film and about 10 or 12 other films about Jesus and chopped them into little short videos, 3, 4, and 5 minutes long. And I went to the part where it told the story of the triumphal entry. And there's bunches of them. I ended up not using the Jesus film. I ended up using the movie that's the Gospel of John. They use every word exactly as it's said in the Bible. And they dramatize it to go with it. And I found the triumphal entry story. And the beauty of this is there's like 1,900 languages or something that are translated in. So I found this the clip I wanted in Mandarin. And I brought it in and showed them the triumphal entry. And as soon as it started to play, when they hear that it's in Mandarin, they say, oh, it's in Chinese. I said, yeah, because I want them to hear this well. I don't want them just to kind of get it in English. So we do the triumphal entry, and at the very end of the triumphal entry, part of that clip is Jesus going in kind of into Jerusalem, and there's a religious leaders there, and they are fussing at him a little bit, and he says something about knowing what was going to happen. And when we finished that clip, she said, so he knew what was going to happen? Yes, he did. And then she says, now, there's something else, too, that happens here about a big dinner, isn't there? I thought, oh, yeah, the last. I said, I know that one. I'll find the clip for that and bring it next week. So the next week we did the Last Supper, and then I went and showed another short clip about him being sentenced and then the crucifixion. And they were still engaged with me, so the following week I came in and we looked at the resurrection, Thomas's doubts, and that story about the miraculous catch where they're by the Sea of Galilee and Jesus shows up. And this proves that Jesus was truly alive. He wasn't just a ghost. Because in Chinese religious whatever, there's lots of ghosts kinds of things. And I wanted him to know that he really, really was alive. And then we finished the fourth one where Jesus talks to his disciples and says, go to the whole world. And then he goes up into heaven. And I said, this is why I'm here in Taiwan. Because Jesus has told us to go tell the story to the whole world. You too. Now, that's as far as we've gotten. This has been 5 years of intermittent conversations. 6 years since I first met them. No, five. Okay, so it is not fast. And somewhere out there, there's a statistic that says how many times a person has to hear the gospel before they can make a decision. And I tried to find it and couldn't find it. But I think it's somewhere like 20 times or something. I mean, it is not easy. It is not fast. People have been there for 40 years. You know, yes, they have won people to Christ, but when you compare it to some other places in the world, there are places where you can have a lot more to show for all your ministry than Taiwan. It's one of the hard places to be. But God is working, and don't give up. All right, now jump to the next one, and we'll finish up right away because I'm running out of time. But Mia had an accident in June, early July. A car hit her. She was on a scooter, threw her into the rice paddies. Fortunately, didn't throw her in the asphalt. She would have been really bad off in the asphalt. But she ended up with broken femur, and she ended up with a 12-hour surgery. The last 4 hours of it was suturing up her face and her scalp. And later on, at some point, the glass, and I don't know where the glass came from, but the glass came to the surface, and they had to pick that out. Now, I had a text from Mandy last night or early this morning, I forget which, and it said that Mia has been in five different facilities. The way the insurance system there is, you can't stay in any one longer than 2 weeks, then you'll find another one, then they'll pay again. If you stay longer than two, then they won't pay the rest. So she's been in rehab, to a hospital for 2 weeks, and then rehab for four different rehabs. But this coming Friday, she will go home, finally. She has pins in her legs and all kinds of stuff. However, her femur has not really seated into her hip joint. And they have concluded that she will need to, when she gets strong enough, she will need to have a hip replacement. So she's been doing non-weight-bearing physical therapy and that kind of stuff. But one day, Mandy came to Language Exchange to me after this had happened, and I asked about her sister, and she told me whatever the news was that day. And then she said, thank you for praying for her. Now, I had not said out loud that I was praying for her, but she knew I was praying for her. And I said, yes, I am. And I have lots of friends who are praying for her, too. And then another time I came back and she said, thank you again, you know, and thank all your friends who are praying. Most recently, at one point, Mia drew some pictures of little chipmunks or bunny rabbits or something, and they said thank you on it as a way to thank me and my family. She knows my family's praying, but my other friends too. Most recently, it's probably been a month now, I was eating dessert with Mandy, and she said, you know, she has not had pain doing the physical therapy. Now, I don't know if that's good or bad, because physical therapy's, to be good, is supposed to be painful. But the point is, she's not in excruciating pain all the time, even though she isn't fully healed. And she attributes that to the prayers. And I said something, I don't remember what I said, and she said, yes, but they are powerful. And I thought, okay, I'm not arguing with that. I agree. It's the only thing I can do. We can't go visit. Actually, her family couldn't hardly go visit because of COVID. And even then, even if I could visit, my going as a foreigner with limited language and not knowing what's going on creates all kinds of work for them. I'm not going to go visit her in a hospital or a medical facility. Now, when she's home or whatever, and I get back in January, by then I probably will be able to. But the point is, praying is the best thing I can do. And they recognize that. And they are grateful for it. Now, we need to keep praying that during this time, hit the prayer requests. Here's the other question. So there we are, that family. But who does that family know that someday I'll get to be connected to? Or that they'll actually do the connecting once they know the gospel? And it can just keep going. Now to the prayer request. Pray that God's, the prayers of God's people for me as healing will really open this family up to the gospel fully. And that there will be opportunity when I get back to somehow figure out a way to start telling the stories from creation to Jesus in some, but I'm not trying to overtake this language exchange thing. It needs to be mutually beneficial, but I'm looking for how can I walk them through the whole sequence of the gospel, because I think that's part of how they'll begin to grasp the reality. There are some other, I have two or three other charts like this of other spheres where I'm doing some things, so you could pray about those too. I'm co-facilitating a Bible study at a church I'm part of and whatnot. And then that there would be a gospel breakthrough in Taiwan. And then finally, that this issue with China, that threat will bring people to look to Christ. That it will be a crisis that helps them realize they need the creator of the world, not just their little wooden gods in their temples. All right, let's pray. I want to pray with you for some of these things. Jesus, you have heard our discussion this morning. And you know far more the details of what's gone on in these conversations that I've had with Mandy and her, Vincent and her family. And I just know that you're at work, though sometimes it's really slow to see. Father, I pray that in spite of the terribleness of this scooter car accident, I thank you that you're using it to help them recognize that prayer is powerful and that you work. Not because we manipulate you through prayer to do things, but because you love people you created and you want them to know you. Help me to be a good servant in sharing that truth to this family and to others. But I pray that this will be just the beginning of the spread of the gospel in this family's life and their immediate friends and neighbors, and that you would be glorified in that experience. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.